You're listening to Musically Speaking on 91.9 KVCR. My name is Margaret Worsley, and I'm Associate Professor of Music at San Bernardino Valley College. The Redlands Symphony will be performing on Saturday, April 6th, in Memorial Chapel at the University of Redlands. Their featured soloists in this upcoming performance will be the extraordinary and dynamic violinist, Laura St. John, who is with us today. Welcome, Laura, to Musically Speaking.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much.
I'm really excited to get the scoop from you on what's happening, but first, can you give our listeners just a little bit of background on what you do and where you're based?
Let me try to do this very quickly. I am a violinist, and I've actually been doing that since I was 2.5 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I'm originally Canadian. I'm now based in New York City.
Gotcha. We love Canadians.
Well, kind of who doesn't, right?
All right.
We're really nice.
You are. All of you are really nice. So you'll be performing Vivaldi's epic work, The Four Seasons, with the Redlands Symphony on April 6th. And I'd love to deep dive a little into this very special composition with you, maybe starting with some of the history of the work. Can you tell us how and why this piece came to be?
Well, somehow Vivaldi managed to, even with a very small sort of string orchestra and harpsichord, managed to evoke so many descriptions of, like, nature in his Four Seasons. And it's kind of, like, pretty much unequaled, even with, like, the bigger orchestra of today. We think he wrote these little sonnets himself, these little poems about spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And you can really hear, like, you know, the sort of the cute little birds chirping in spring and, you know, nice pastoral dances. And then in summer, I guess he kind of thought of it as a little bit too extreme. And then the birds kind of turn into sort of a little bit nastier birds, like cuckoos. And it's in minor, as opposed to spring being in major. And then he brings in the great big storm in the last movement. And, you know, autumn, he was thinking of the harvest. So in the first movement of autumn, you actually have a whole bunch of drunk people.
As you do.
I guess it's more or less the harvest of grapes, I guess. And the last movement of autumn is actually the fox hunt, the beast hunt. So we're not quite sure exactly what hunt, but, you know, he starts out with the trumpets and the horns, and you can sort of hear in a way the dogs barking in certain places, and the solo violin is kind of the fox, you know, trying to run away. Spoiler alert, unfortunately, fox does die at the end, and then the hunting party goes off into the distance.
Uh-oh.
And then winter, you know, he makes such icy sounds in the beginning of winter, and we're back in minor again, and, you know, it's basically the cold wind coming from the north, and, you know, very exciting winter storms and people skating and sort of slipping on the ice. And, you know, and it's all like right there written, you know, like it's actually in the score.
Oh, cool.
So it's really fun to kind of be like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to be somebody slipping on the ice right here. And, this should be like really shivery and extremely cold. And, you know, that kind of, it's kind of nice to have that, like, actual words to think about, I think. So that's kind of more or less the Four Seasons of Vivaldi. And, you know, I think, I mean, unless you live in the tropics or something, it's still pretty much exactly the sort of same thing today. Winter is cold and summer is hot, and the other two are kind of fun and major.
Yeah, I love that. It's just super programmatic, and you can hear the you can hear the birds, you can hear the water, you can hear the dogs that's barking. That's really cool in the music. Not a lot of people realize it's a set of concertos. Like, each season features an entire self-contained 3-movement concerto.
Right.
Are you going to be performing all 4 concertos or all 4 seasons?
Yes, all 4 seasons. Well, they're small. They're not 30-minute concertos. That might be a bit much. They're approximately 10 minutes each.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's 12 movements, and at that time, Baroque concertos, they weren't like, you know, the sort of great big romantic 35-minute concertos. They were always quite short, like in the sort of 8 to 12-minute range, basically.
Yeah, I like that. It's digestible. This is such an iconic work. No matter who you are, these themes are, like, instantly recognizable. How do you infuse your own style into such well-known compositions, and has performing this work changed for you over the years?
Well, I did a tour once of the Four Seasons in, I think, in Cornwall and Devon in England, and it was quite fun because every night we'd just sort of try something new. I mean, no matter how sort of out there and ridiculous it might be, like, okay, let's see if this works or let's see if that works, because, you know, we were doing it in sort of churches all over the place, and I would say about 50% of the stuff stuck.
Wow.
You know, like different tempos. Like, I'd be like, okay, hey guys, let's try it tonight. Let's do this movement, like twice the tempo we've been doing it before, and things like that. So it was really great for me to be able to sort of to experiment and like in real time, you know, like in actual concerts, and sort of see how did that feel. Like, no, I didn't like that tonight, so let's not do that, let's do this, you know. So that really sort of gave me what I stick with these days. And I tend to do and ask the orchestra to do quite a lot of the effects, you know, to really bring out the gunshots, to really have that dog barking by the shepherd, and, you know, to make sure that all these descriptions can be heard and understood whether or not you know the sonnet.
Yeah. Oh, that is so exciting. I can't wait to hear this creative version with Redlands. That's going to be awesome. If you're just joining us, this is Musically Speaking, and we're chatting with violinist Laura St. John, who will be the featured soloist in the upcoming Redlands Symphony Concert. Laura, Argentinian music seems to hold a special place in your heart, and you'll be performing pieces by Astor Piazzolla in this concert. What initially sparked your interest in Argentinian genres, and has it influenced your approach to classical violin performance?
Well, it's tango is kind of a very, it's obviously very Argentinian and Uruguayan, and I, funny enough, grew up with a little Canadian girl with an Argentinophile, I don't know if that's a word, father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he always, we had Yupanqui and Mercedes Sosa, and so I kind of grew up with Argentinian music of all things. And he was a pretty big Piazzolla fan. I remember when Zero Hour came out, and, you know, it was just on repeat all the time. And then, actually, I was lucky enough, I guess this would be about 12 years ago now, to do a concert in Central Park, the 25th anniversary of Piazzolla's concert in Central Park, cool. In the very same band shell, with the very same pianist, with Pablo Ziegler.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, so that was, super exciting and awesome. And we had about 5,000 people.
Wow.
It was free, but... But, I mean, it was just... It was an amazing thing to be doing it on in the same place and the same repertoire and everything. And it was just, it was an unforgettable evening. And it was also really beautiful night. So, and then these Four Seasons that he wrote, Desyatnikov, a Russian composer, actually kind of rearranged them for string orchestra. And I actually have a whole bunch of notes that I have with this stuff to kind of make it more like it would have been with Piazzolla's quintet. So it'll be quite authentic. I expect.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. So you've got Four Seasons from Vivaldi and Four Seasons from Piazzolla.
Yeah, so 8 seasons. And what I like to do actually is, because, you know, Argentina is in the southern hemisphere, so we go opposite. It starts with autumn, then to winter, than to spring, than summer.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, and it works. I think it works really well to intersperse them.
Yeah, no, that's going to be great. We've got to take a quick break, but we'll return to hear more about violinist Laura St. John here on Musically Speaking. I'm Margaret Worsley. We'll be right back.
Thank you. You're listening to 91.9 KVCR and kvcrnews.org. This is Musically Speaking. I'm Rick Dulock with this content warning. In the segment just ahead, Margaret Worsley, our host, and her guest, Laura St. John, will be speaking about sexual violence against children. The discussion may not be appropriate for all audiences, including former victims. Thank you.
You're listening to Musically Speaking on 91.9 KVCR. I'm Margaret Worsley. Let's get back to my interview with violinist Laura St. John, who will be performing Vivaldi and Piazzolla with the Redlands Symphony on their upcoming concert at the University of Redlands. I'd like to ask a bit of a heavy question, if you're okay with it. You're a strong advocate in protecting young people against sexual abuse, sparked by your own experiences as a child when you were preyed upon. From your perspective, do you see these institutional systems, do you think they're evolving since the Me Too movement, and do you believe there's some kind of role that the arts can play in society that's helping us to navigate or foster healing through creativity and empathy?
Well, I think creativity, just music and art alone, has always been something which can help people of all genders. I certainly, things are not happening fast enough. Even just silly little things like, why don't studios in almost every music institution, why don't they have windows? Why are there locks? Silly little things like this. You know, it's 2024. People should get over this idea that, oh, you know, the teacher needs privacy. The teacher is a guru. The teacher, everything he says must be done. We got to get past that, because it is a perfect breeding ground for abusers, and as I know all too well. And I don't see the institutions admitting to past mistakes. I don't see them really trying to do any better. You know, they all say this sort of Title IX stuff and whatever, but it's lip service, really. And I've been really, really frustrated by it, because obviously in my lifetime, I want this to be ended in these institutions of supposed, like, hallowed grounds and higher learning. And instead, it just it creates a lot of trouble. Especially, there's very few professions where, as I mentioned before, I started when I was 2.5. I mean, you might have gymnastics and sports that might be a little bit of a kind of the same thing, because you do have to start very, very young. But with violin, with piano, with cello, that has to be started, you know, as a child. And so you have these children in these positions of complete sort of deification of these teachers. And if these teachers are bad people, which a lot of them are, they seem to think of children as like some sort of a party favor or something. And women. I mean, this also happens in colleges as well. But it's a very bad situation, and something that I'm trying to shout about from the rooftops, because that's the only way anything is going to change.
Yeah.
And I mean, this happened to me at, like, arguably, you know, the greatest music school in the U.S. or something, at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. It was done under threat because my brother was also there. And yeah, my teacher said, oh, I'm going to kick him out unless you do this. So I was raped at 14 and abused that whole year. And yeah, and it's, you know, it's been, obviously, it's a lifetime of, it's kind of a life sentence, really.
Yeah.
And I'm nearing the sort of fine cut of a documentary that I've been working on for the past 5 years since I became public about my own situation. And I heard from so many people after I became public, and a lot of it was very similar stories, all of them different, but all of them similar. The same situation of having these predators in positions of power. And I even call it predator whack-a-mole. I have no idea why music schools don't do any kind of background check, but they just kind of don't. They allow people to resign, and then those people just go and do the same thing for another 20 years. Like Stephen Shipps in Michigan. Everybody knew about that from North Carolina. School of the Arts, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. and the thing is, everybody knows, and everybody knew it. It's just like, oh, well, you know, that's the way they are, these men. No, mm-hmm. that should not be allowed. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit like, sort of grandstanding here, whatever, but I feel very, very strongly about all of this, yeah.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate everything that you continue to talk about. I appreciate your bravery. You continued your artistry and you've continued your bravery in speaking out. This stuff needs to be talked about. And I'm really glad that we were able to talk about it a little bit today as well. Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. This is Musically Speaking, and we're chatting with Lara St. John, who will be the violin soloist for the upcoming Redlands Symphony performance on April 6th. Lara, you are an inspiring phoenix who's risen from some serious adversity and are influencing positive change in the world. There's one more item I'd love to ask you about, and that is your record label, Ann Callaghan, which you founded in 1999. Listeners may not be aware how rare that is in the classical realm, so would you mind telling us just a little bit about why and how you started this label?
Yeah, I think I was actually the first classical artists to sort of go on their own and start a label, because back in 99, as people may or may not remember, it wasn't something that was really done at all, artist-owned labels. I'd like to say that I influenced Radiohead, but probably not.
Maybe.
But I was before them, though. Wow. I think they started theirs in 2004. But anyway, I basically wanted to have complete control over what I put out there, because a recording is forever. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want some record label executive telling me, look, we really need you to do sonatas for violin and sackbut, you know, or I don't know. Apparently there are some really good sonatas for violin and sackbut. But I wanted to just have, first of all, control, and also just, I wanted it to be genuine. Like what I put out there, I want it to be something I really, really care about, something that I think I can do really well, and just have all the choices. Mm-hmm. And possibilities. And so, of course, being sole owner of a record label and the sole employee is like traveling all the time. So I'm lucky if I do one recording a year. But, you know, that's okay with me. As long as I really believe in it and it's something that I'm into, then I don't need to be doing 2, 3, 4, 5 records a year, mm-hmm. or anything like that. So it was a sort of a rocky beginning, because as most musicians, I'm a terrible business person. I feel like every musician is like, money is only important if you don't have it. And so I had no idea how to incorporate myself. So there were a lot of mistakes there in the beginning in the early 2000s. But I'm so glad. Like, I'm really proud of all my productions that I've done, and really happy that I did that way back then.
You should be proud.
Kind of a silly little kid, really, like not really knowing what she was doing. But I'm glad it kept going and persevered.
Yeah, no, it's an inspiration. You've got an incredible career that you've been living and playing through, and it is totally inspiring. So you've got Vivaldi and Piazzolla with the Redlands Symphony on April 6th.
Yep.
Then what's next for you? What else are you preparing, and where else can music enthusiasts hear you perform?
Well, I think I will be coming to Redlands from Spain, actually.
Oh.
I'm going to have to do it directly because there wasn't enough time to come home. So it'll be a big suitcase. But I'm going over to Spain for a couple of concerts. I've got one in Ithaca next week, I think, with a copy of two. And then, actually, I've decided to take most of the summer off just to work on the film.
Oh, cool.
So I don't kind of start back on the road again until, I believe, something like August will be a festival in Austria and some stuff in Europe, and then September my thing really starts again. So yeah, I've decided I've got about three months off after Redlands.
Awesome. That,
I mean, I'm looking forward to, in a way, because, you know, travel, it sort of seems like fun, and I always like it when I'm there, but the getting there is not as much fun as it's cracked up to be.
Oh, yeah.
Especially traveling with a violin and, you know, the airline stories. it's very stressful to travel with an instrument.
Yeah.
Although I will do a little plug for Air Canada, who just recently have said, well, if you're traveling with a musical instrument, you get to pre-board.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's the first time that an airline has ever been even like remotely nice to musicians.
Oh my gosh. Way to go, Air Canada. That's great.
Well, kind of, but I mean, obviously you have to kind of be traveling within Canada or to Canada or from. So it doesn't do much for American musicians, but it is kind of nice. And so maybe somehow the other airlines will sort of take that as a good example.
I hope so. That's fantastic. Well, enjoy your summer off or working on the documentary and do keep us posted. That's really, really cool.
I will do, yeah.
Yay. Well, it's been a delight chatting with you, Laura. St. John, you're an inspiration to me and to women everywhere. So thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll be sure to post Laura St. John's website, the Redland Symphony website, and other pertinent information mentioned in the show online at kvcrnews.org/musicallyspeaking. Thanks again to Laura St. John for joining us today, and we hope to see you at the Redland Symphony performance on April 6th at 7:30 p.m. in Memorial Chapel at the University of Redlands. Musically Speaking is a production of KVCR News in collaboration with San Bernardino Valley College. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/musicallyspeaking. You can also listen on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search for Musically Speaking on your favorite streaming service. This month's episode was engineered and edited by Rick Dulock. Production assistance by Eduardo Sanchez, with technical, website, and social media support from Tim Steidel and Sean Houlihan. We do hope you'll join us next month on the fourth Saturday and following Monday for our next episode of Musically Speaking. I'm your host, Margaret Worsley. Thanks for listening.